The Fed's out of options. Rate cuts, money printing, balance sheet reversals. They call it policy, but it's really panic. This is in-game economics, where hope replaces discipline and the illusion of control finally breaks. They're not cutting rates because things are strong. They're cutting because the system is cracking. Inflation's eating savings. The labor market's stalling. Confidence in the dollar is fading fast. For decades, the Fed built a house of paper. Now they're striking the match that could burn it all down, leaving you to pay the price. When's the last time you actually held the wealth you've spent your life working for? My friends at Noble Gold Investments have been helping Americans move from paper wealth into real tangible assets. Numbers on a screen can disappear, but physical gold and silver, they've outlasted every crisis in history. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and get your free wealth protection kit today. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com for your free wealth protection kit. Discover how simple it is to protect your future.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
The following broadcast may contain free thinking and open-minded discussion, ideas, skepticism, and adult subject matter. Topics will be discussed using adult language, sometimes gratuitously. Get ready to move the conversation forward. This ain't your granddad's news and comment show. This is I Doubt It Podcast with Brittany Page and Jesse Dalamore.
Welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us. Episode 966 of I Doubt It Podcast. I'm your host, as I always am, Jesse Dalamore. And I'm joined by your co-host, as she always does. Join me, Brittany Page, everybody.
Off to a really strong start. It's almost as if we haven't done almost 1,000 episodes of this show. But here we are. It's, you know, it's the existential terror that is weighing on you, that is causing you to malfunction a bit. But I believe that you'll lock it down, because you always do. And I was thinking about what they're going to say about us in 100 years, you know, 200
about
years.
About us personally?
Not us personally. No. No one's going to give a shit about
that's
that.
That's exactly right. Not only will they not give a shit.
Yeah.
No one will even know.
Isn't it freeing to know that? Just go live your life. No one's going to care your life. No, I'm kidding. think about what they're going to say in the future about the election in 2024 of what was wrong with Americans that they allowed this to happen, that they allowed Donald Trump to be elevated to power again. And every day we are grappling with the consequences of that, including the continued war on Iran, which they keep trying to say is not a war, which is very strange because we've had Americans die. They had to do a dignified transfer of troops that were killed.
Yeah.
In this war, they changed the name of they changed it to the Department of War, which we don't call it that, but we're going to say it for now because it's an emphasis on how they're always talking about lethality and out there and killing everyone and being super manly and cool and doing a lot of pull-ups in the way that you're supposed to.
Yeah, Pete Hegseth's a very masculine man, Brittany Page. You got to be able to admit that. Dude, look at those spindly little legs and know. That's a man.
Yes. And
well, it's interesting that the administration, the line from the administration on all the bootlicking sycophants across the Senate and the House, they insist it's not a war. But if you go to the people directly making the decisions, Donald Trump and Pete Hegseth, they say it's a war. They continuously repeat this war, war is hell, war, 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 war. And it's all of the insects that scurry around Donald Trump and Pete Hegseth who say not a war.
Yeah. And this happened again this weekend during a press gaggle on Air Force One, where it was Trump, Pete Hegseth, and Steve Witkoff. And they were sitting there standing there taking questions from reporters. And this is going to be two questions in one in this clip. And the first question is about the dignified transfer. And essentially, are there going to be more, meaning are there going to be more deaths of American soldiers?
Well, let's explain the dignified transfer thing.
Yeah.
So when someone dies in combat, their remains are transferred back to the United States, normally through a military installation in Dover, Delaware. And typically, until the pace at which they start, it becomes too much to be there all the time. Presidents will be there to accept the remains, and it's a solemn occasion. It's dealt with solemnity and respect. This time, Donald Trump wore a ball cap during the whole thing. I don't think we're going to get to this, but Fox News, instead of playing that footage, they played footage from an earlier time years ago where he was dressed appropriately and not disrespecting the proceedings by wearing a ball cap. But yeah, that's what a dignified transfer is.
Yeah, it's important to explain that. And the second part of the question is going to pivot to the Iranian elementary school that was bombed. And there were almost 200 girls and staff at the school that were murdered in this bombing, which is increasingly looking like the United States is responsible for this bombing. And we'll get to that in a moment. But so this is a two-parter. It's one, are there going to be more dignified transfers? Meaning, are there going to be more American troops killed in this war in Iran? And two, did the United States bomb a school and murder schoolgirls?
You're going to end up coming back to Dover for more of these such dignified transfers.
Sure, I hate to do it, but it's a part of war, isn't it? Who are you with?
The Washington Post.
Would you say it's a part of war?
The deaths are part of war, yeah.
Yeah, it's a part of war. It's a sad part of war. It's the bad part of war.
Mr. President, did the United States bomb a girls' elementary school in southern Iran on the first day of the war and kill 175 people?
In my opinion, based on what I've seen, that was done by Iran.
Is that true, Mr. Hegseth? It was Iran who did that?
We're certainly investigating.
Still investigating.
But the only side that targets civilians is Iran.
We think it was done by Iran. Because they're very inaccurate, as you know, with their munitions. They have no accuracy whatsoever. It was done by Iran.
It's funny. He is just such a befuddled moron.
Which one?
Well, both, but Donald Trump certainly. It is the bad part of war. That's the bad part. What's the good part of war?
Right.
Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And Pete Hegseth looking
panicked.
Yeah, not making eye contact, looking at the ground, fiddling around, shuffling. Oh, well, it was, we don't target. We don't those are very choice, specifically chosen words, that we don't target civilian targets. Well, if an errant missile fires or we accidentally target or we accidentally kill people with munitions, it's not targeting, it's just an accident. It's just collateral damage that happens to be a girls' school where nearly 200 people have been, call it what it is, murdered by the United States of America, taking a page out of the playbook of Israel, conducting unethical, immoral violations of human rights on a day-to-day-to-day basis.
When lying is an essential part of the job description, you'd think that you would be better at it. And Pete Hegseth is really struggling, I think, in performing the lying well. You know, he's lying. He's doing that. He's doing what is required of him in his job. But he is not doing it well, okay? He seemed nervous while he was lying. Because, again, he has to stand there and he contradicted Trump, right?
Yeah.
Where he's saying, Trump is saying, no, it's Iran that bombed their own elementary school and killed those girls and the staff that work in that school. And then Pete Hegseth says, well, we're still investigating that. That's a contradiction. And what we're finding, and Reuters is reporting this, is that U.S. military investigators believe that it is likely that the United States is responsible for that bombing of that school in Iran. That's what motivated that question from that reporter. And they're also reporting that that school that was targeted was bombed twice, 40 minutes apart,
yeah, listen,
in Iran.
It would be, if it was an unequivocal no, if the answer was no, they would say, no, we did not do it. The reason they're hedging is because as investigations come out and more reporting is done, the picture is far more clear that absolutely it was us. That's why he's not just saying flatly, it wasn't us. No, it wasn't. Donald Trump, he just lies at a breakneck pace. So he's going to say, well, we think it's Iran. He's also not unequivocally stating, we did not kill little girls at school with American munitions targeted by American military. He's not saying that. That should tell you everything you need to know, because if it was unequivocal, they would say.
Well, and it's also interesting because Pete Hegseth is always talking about like the stupid rules of engagement,
yeah,
and that it's essentially weak to follow rules and respect human rights. And so why would he back down from this? You'd think he would just lean into the fact that, similar to how Trump is doing, there's going to be people that die. Yeah. You know, who cares, essentially, is how Trump is acting.
Well, that's the bad part of war.
Yeah. You think that Pete Hegseth would also kind of follow his lead and lean into that and say, yeah, listen, there's going to be collateral damage in war, and we believe in what we're doing here. And I mean, it's kind of a sign that they just don't have it together. They don't actually know what they're doing. But to kind of go deeper into this investigation that's taking place, where military investigators are starting to find evidence believing that it is likely that the United States is responsible for bombing this school and killing these children. CNN's Caitlin Collins kind of walked through this analysis and took us through some of the evidence behind this.
Weeks since this war with Iran has been underway, the deadliest incident of civilian casualties was a strike that happened on an elementary school in southern Iran that killed scores of children. Tonight, a CNN analysis of that attack reveals evidence suggesting that the United States military was likely responsible for it. What you're about to see is disturbing. I want to warn you. The United States says it's still under investigation. But this was the scene at the school just after the strikes 1 week ago, nearly. CNN has not independently confirmed the death toll, but Iranian health officials and state media believe that at least 168 children and 14 teachers were killed. Our analysis, which is based on satellite imagery, geolocated videos, and the assessment of munitions experts, suggests that the school was hit around the same time that an attack that American forces had launched on a neighboring Iranian naval base. This new satellite image shows several Revolutionary Guard buildings near the all-girls school. You can see how close they are. In red, you can see the craters at the center of the structures, including the school, and what experts say look like precision strikes. A wall, marked by that dotted line there, is all that separates the school and this base. When asked about the strike this week under multiple times during multiple different press briefings, this is what Trump administration officials have told reporters.
Did the United States airstrike a girls' elementary school and kill 175 people?
Not that we know of, Sean, and the Department of War is investigating this matter, and I would just tell you very strongly, the United States of America does not target civilians, unlike the rogue Iranian regime that targets civilians, that kills children, that has killed thousands of their own people in the past several weeks, and uses propaganda quite effectively, and unfortunately, many people in this room have fallen for that propaganda.
Can you give us an update on what the administration knows, what you know now about the reported strike on a girls' school in southern Iran on Saturday?
All I can say is that we're investigating that. We, of course, never target civilian targets, but we're taking a look and investigating that.
Now, the internet blackout in Iran has made it very difficult for our teams to examine weapons fragments that are left at the scene for further evidence of responsibility. Reuters reports, though, that U.S. military investigators also believe it is likely U.S. forces were behind that strike.
Notice their repeated usage of the word, "we don't target." That's what they're saying. I predict that the narrative is very likely to shift from "we don't target," "we didn't do this," to "yeah, actually, we did do this, but this was a military target," because just like in Gaza, with the genocide in Gaza, every hospital was also a front for Hamas. Every school was a front for Hamas. Every mosque was also just a front. Oh, they were just using human shields, and we had no choice but to kill 200 little girls. I mean, that's where we're going here.
Yeah, again, every day I just sit here and marvel at how Donald Trump is ruining all of our lives and killing children. You know, teaming up with Israel to kill children.
Well, they saw Israel face no consequences. Bibi Netanyahu faced no consequences for conducting a genocide where 70,000 Palestinians, 70,000 plus, have been killed. The 99% of them, 99 point whatever percent of them, non-combatants, civilians, not military targets. many of them women and children. And the 70,000 number isn't even refuted by Israel anymore. Donald Trump has seen no consequences. Oh, shit. I can kill people. I can live out my most feverish sociopathic fantasy and nothing will be done. And nothing likely will be done.
Yeah, I mean, think of that too, because this week the DOJ put back up these unredacted files that involve, and this is just a brief tangent, that Donald Trump's interaction, the allegations of a 13-year-old who came forward and said that he raped her. And those documents are so disgusting and horrifying to read. The details are horrific. And when you hear the media talk about it, they often say these are unsubstantiated. What they don't tell you is that the FBI conducted 4 interviews with her and believed that she was credible. And so you have Donald Trump being credibly accused this week of raping a teenager. And that is not something that even rises to, like, it wasn't part of the questioning on Air Force One. It was not part of that entire 20-minute press gaggle.
He's being covered for by the media because every allegation, every accusation is unsubstantiated until there's a conviction. Every murder case, all these are unsubstantiated claims until there's a conviction. Anytime you get in a car accident and it's one word against the other, it's unsubstantiated until a conclusion has been reached. Mm-hmm. So to say it is, why are they not saying that about every other crime and every other reporting that they're doing about everything else? They're just doing it to cover for Donald Trump.
Yeah. And additionally, we have with the war in Iran, Russia is reportedly now giving intelligence to Iran to attack the United States. And so this was part of the press gaggle questioning as well, where Steve Witkoff was kind of forced to come from the back. Donald Trump's like, come up here. I'm sick of answering questions. And he's the U.S. special envoy to the Middle East. So Steve Witkoff comes forward and they ask him about is there concern over Russia giving Iran intelligence to attack the United States?
Mr. Witkoff, have you communicated to the Russians not to send targeting information and other assistance to the Iranians?
I've strongly said that.
Do you believe that they are?
I hope they're not.
Oh, you hope? Do you see any evidence?
We don't know, but it's not doing very well. If they are, it's not helping much. If you take a look at what's happened to Iran in the last week, if they're getting information, it's not helping them much.
What would it mean to you if they were? I mean, even if it's not helping the Iranians particularly much, it's still involving themselves in a conflict that they're not
correct. They'd say we do it against them, wouldn't they? Huh? Wouldn't they say that? We do it against them? I don't know. Look, they can give all the information that they want, but the people they're sending it to are overwhelmed. Russia would be overwhelmed, too. Anybody would be overwhelmed. We have the greatest military on earth, and I built it in my first term, and unfortunately, I'm forced to use it now. But when you look at what we did with Venezuela, when you look at what we did with the B-2 bombers, that was a very big moment because Iran was going to have a nuclear weapon within 2 or 3 weeks, and that stopped it, and it stopped it cold. And you ask about maybe going back and getting that, something could happen at the right time.
This is where all of the macho man stuff falls apart for Donald Trump and all of his little sycophants, is that he cowers to Vladimir Putin every time. Every time. I mean, they're like, yeah, we told him very strongly that he shouldn't be doing that. We expressed our concerns about that.
And
you
then,
know?
Well, is he going to stop? Well, I hope he does.
Yeah, okay.
I hope he listens to my very strong statement that I made to him. What is that? Is that Susan Collins in a Steve Witkoff suit?
It sure sounded like it. It sure sounded like it, yeah.
I am constantly in awe of the fact that this dipshit is our president when he's like, I don't know, look, and then he just distracts from the issue of Russia talking about Venezuela and how he built the military. Now it's not even rebuilt. Now it's just straight up he built the military in his first term. And now, unfortunately, I have to use it. This is, again, going back to how you opened the show, in 50 years, in 100 years, people are going to look back just like we look at the Nazis. It's like, What happened? Why did the people allow this to happen? And we're in the same boat right now, asking ourselves right now the same questions. Why have we allowed this to happen? And why aren't Democrats in leadership elected, people in power, not people with a microphone and a camera, people who actually have political power in this moment, why are they not doing more?
Right. And the response to Russia giving Iran intelligence to attack the United States could be standing by Ukraine, giving more support to Ukraine. But instead, Donald Trump has continuously taken Vladimir Putin's side. And, you know, we don't know the details behind why that is the case. We don't necessarily...
We can pretty accurately speculate, though.
We don't necessarily know exactly why that's happening. But we do get a glimpse of just how desperate the Trump administration is, how fearful they are of Vladimir Putin, because even the White House press secretary, Caroline Levitt, was asked this question, because it's very serious if Russia is giving Iran intelligence to attack the United States. And so naturally, the press is really focusing on this issue, trying to get an answer from the Trump administration. And I think this was actually Caroline Levitt's appearance on Fox News. This was not during a press conference. But she was asked, surprisingly, by Fox hosts about this. And wouldn't you know it, Caroline Levitt doesn't really think this is a very important topic.
Having me.
I wanted to start you off this afternoon because we have confirmed reports from U.S. officials that Russia is providing intelligence to Iran to help it target U.S. assets in the region. I'm sure this is something that does not please the president whatsoever. Has he spoken to Putin about it?
Well, look, I'll leave that to the president to answer himself. But what I will tell you, John, we don't comment on intelligence reports that are leaked to the press. Whether or not this happened, frankly, it does not really matter, because President Trump and the United States military are absolutely decimating the rogue Iranian terrorist regime.
It doesn't matter that Russia can give precise coordinates and intelligence related to military installations, military operations, the presence at granular levels of our military that would lead Iran to accurately target, strike targets, and kill American soldiers and Marines and airmen and sailors. It doesn't matter. Again, all of this goes to Donald Trump trying to cover up. What does Russia have on Donald Trump?
Mm-hmm.
Because as you mentioned about Ukraine, we could, all right, you want to target us? You want to give them intelligence? Here's $20 billion, Ukraine. Here are hellfire missiles. Here are munitions and artillery. We will load you up. Hey, you want a couple M1 A2 Abrams tanks? Here you go, Ukraine. Have at it. End the war right now. We could do that.
Mm-hmm.
Donald Trump's not going to do that, because who knows? Ilhan Omar was on the steps of the Capitol the other day, and we were talking about this clip where she said, yeah, Russia's rumored to have all this information, photos of Donald Trump, who knows? The P-tape might be real, who knows? And I was like, I think she's just trying to get under his skin. I don't know. I don't know if that's why she was doing it, because they clearly have some kind of compromising information on Donald Trump. Otherwise, he would be doing the manly man thing and pushing back and saying, no one's going to make me look weak.
Right.
No one's going to make me look feckless. No one's going to make me look like a fucking fool. Instead, he cowers and acts like a little tiny baby who is just controlled by Vladimir Putin.
Yeah, and so much so that even his usual allies in the media, because, you know, they've kind of hand-selected, hand-created this press briefing room, the press pool, to be a lot of people that are asking questions that Donald Trump appreciates. His most important quality for someone who's allowed in the press pool is, are they nice to me? And Peter Ducey is one that he has identified as being nice to him, and that's primarily because Peter Ducey is a nepo baby, son of Steve Ducey, the host of Fox and Friends in the Morning. And Peter Ducey actually was attacked by Donald Trump for asking this very question about this very issue, trying to figure out what Donald Trump's position is on Russia giving Iran intelligence to attack the United States.
Thank you, President Trump. It sounds like the Russians are helping Iran target and attack Americans now.
That's an easy problem compared to what we're doing here. But can I be honest? It's just, I have a lot of respect for you.
You've always been very nice to me. What a stupid question that is to be asking at this time. We're talking about something else. Can we keep this maybe a little bit? Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Mr. President.
The Fed's out of options. Rate cuts, money printing, balance sheet reversals. They call it policy, but it's really panic. This is in-game economics, where hope replaces discipline and the illusion of control finally breaks. They're not cutting rates because things are strong. They're cutting because the system is cracking. Inflation's eating savings. The labor market's stalling. Confidence in the dollar is fading fast. For decades, the Fed built a house of paper. Now they're striking the match that could burn it all down, leaving you to pay the price. When's the last time you actually held the wealth you've spent your life working for? My friends at Noble Gold Investments have been helping Americans move from paper wealth into real tangible assets. Numbers on a screen can disappear, but physical gold and silver, they've outlasted every crisis in history. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and get your free wealth protection kit today. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com for your free wealth protection kit. Discover how simple it is to protect your future.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
This was a college sports roundtable, additionally, for context. So he really didn't want to talk about anything related to what the administration is doing, the important issues. He wanted to ensure that people gave him easy questions. And he was slurring a little bit there, I noticed. Just a tad.
Happening more and more.
Yeah.
Happening more and more.
Yeah.
Also, Peter Doocy even kid-gloved the question and said, "It sounds like blah, blah, blah," when John Roberts in the previous clip with Caroline Leavitt said, "We've confirmed reporting. We are confirming this reporting." And Peter Doocy's like, "It sounds like, Mr. President." Mm-hmm. And even that was too much. What a stupid question. Let's deal with this critically important thing, college sports. Why are you talking about my unnecessary, illegal, unconstitutional war that has already resulted in a half dozen American service members dead? Let's talk about sports, Peter Doocy. What a stupid question. And also, stop being mean to me. You're usually really nice to me.
I mean, what's remarkable about this moment as well is how Democrats have been begging for an opposition party. We have been looking to Democrats, screaming at the sky, saying, "Why are you not acting as an actual opposition party?" I mean, just this past week, there were Democrats, Senate Democrats like Alyssa Slotkin, who didn't roll out giving Donald Trump more money for this war, saying that we're already in it. We're in the war. So now that means that we need to be open to giving Donald Trump more money. How much is this costing? $1 billion a day?
At the very least, yeah.
And they are saying that now we're in it. Now we have to give them more money.
Also, it is remarkable to me that also Democrats, I'm talking about elected Democrats, not you, not us at the table here, they have been like waiting for a moment to give them the motivation, to give them the excuse to be the opposition party, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then now they have it. And so many of them are like, "Well, oh, we're in it," Alyssa Slotkin, mm-hmm. or others are being interviewed and like, "Hey, are you going to vote for further funding? For more money for the military that already gets $1 trillion a year? We need to give them more billions of dollars to fund Donald Trump's illegal, unconstitutional war. Do we need to give them more billions of dollars to bomb more children's schools?"
Mm-hmm.
And they're missing the moment again because they cannot be counted upon. Largely, there's a few out there, but largely, they're not getting it done.
Yeah, and there were some Democrats that joined with the Republicans to vote against a war powers resolution that would have required the Trump administration to get congressional approval before additional military action against Iran. And those Democrats in the House were the usual suspects, Henry Cuellar, Greg Landsman, Jared Golden, Juan Vargas, and then John Fetterman in the Senate joined with Republicans to vote against the War Powers Resolution, to reject the War Powers Resolution as well. And I watched this clip of Representative Seth Moulton from Massachusetts, I believe. He went on MS Now. Look at me saying MS Now, naturally. It used to be MSNBC, it's MS Now. And he was on the weekend show, and it was remarkable when one of the hosts asked a fantastic question about whether or not Republicans and Democrats who are refusing to do something to rein in Donald Trump, whether they have blood on their hands. And this seems like an easy question, right? Because you're bombing children's schools and you're killing little girls.
Without, we need to drill down on this. Without authorization, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 11 of the United States Constitution gives Congress exclusivity, the exclusive power to declare war. Donald Trump cannot declare war against another nation. It does, that power does not exist for the president. It's the by design for all of these people. I'm a constitutional purist. The fuck you are if you're not pushing back against this. And here we are with so many Democrats who are still leaving the door open to maybe allow Donald Trump and fund Donald Trump's illegal war. I don't understand these people who want to be in Congress, but don't want the powers that come along with being in Congress.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about over 1,300 civilians killed so far in the war in Iran. We're talking about schools being targeted. We're talking about a hospital. We're talking about historical landmarks that have been ruined. There are civilians being killed right now. And Seth Moulton is asked, are the Republicans and Democrats who are refusing to rein in Donald Trump, do they have blood on their hands? And for some reason, he can't even agree with this basic fact.
So, Congressman, do you believe that the Republicans and Democrats who voted basically to allow President Trump to do what he with this war will have blood on their hands? Do they already have blood on their hands?
I mean, I don't know if I'd use the term blood on their hands, but the point
is... Well, then what term would you use?
They are complicit. Complicit? What? Complicit with this administration, complicit with the idea that the executive, whoever it is, can just commit massive amounts of the U.S. military in the face of no imminent threat. I mean, the fact that Rubio has to say that the imminent threat was from Israel, our ally, because they were going to strike, which means that Trump is basically able to be manipulated by an ally. He starts wars due to peer pressure. I think about that for a second. I mean, that's what the Secretary of State is saying. And for Congress to just say, oh, I guess that's fine. Yeah, go ahead. Let that happen. I mean, we have, you will hear Republicans and some Democrats say, well, there are a lot of both Democratic and Republican presidents who have taken the nation to war without congressional approval. But that's just not true. Never on this scale and only in the face of an imminent threat. There's no imminent threat. And this is absolutely a war, not a limited military action. Mm-hmm. The president from day one has said that this is a war. So Congress should just, regardless of how bad Iran is, regardless of how much you hate the Iranian regime, even if you think that we should take military action against Iran at some point, why doesn't Congress just stand up for itself and say we are the ones who just should decide to do this? We are the ones who should debate this with the seriousness that it demands, because young Americans are going to lose their lives as a result of this. Could be American civilians too. So we ought to take our responsibility seriously and actually debate and vote on this.
So no blood on the hands, but you just described blood of Americans on the hands of Donald Trump and the administration that those Democrats who didn't vote the right way are complicit in. So by virtue and by extension of your explanation, yes, indeed, they do have blood on their hands, Seth Moulton. Now, what I would like you to pay attention to is the long filibuster that he did after getting caught in his stupid, it's not blood on their hands, it's complicity. He talked for a whole long time, hoping that the host would move on to another topic or forget what the exact question was at the beginning. It's just politician bullshit. Democrats who did not rein in Donald Trump, Democrats who did not yield the power granted them exclusively by the Constitution, do have blood on their hands. Henry Cuellar has blood on his hands. John Fetterman has blood on his hands. Jared Golden from Maine has blood on his hands. Vargas has blood on his hands. The others that I can't remember off the top of my head, they have blood on their hands. Just say it.
Yeah, I mean, this fake civility that we're always up against here is nauseating, especially when, I mean, you're just describing facts. It's not even like you're insulting someone, you know? You're not calling anyone...
Aren't they proud of their vote?
Yeah, I mean, it's what is this impulse to still, after everything that we're facing, the president of the United States is engaged in an imperialist project and no one is intent on reining him in, and you can't even speak plainly about what the consequences will be? I mean, it was like a throwaway line at the end there that there's a potential for more Americans to be killed, and he can't state up front that the people who are refusing to rein Donald Trump in right now have blood on their hands. You should speak plainly. You are in a position of power. You are reaching who knows how many people with your words. You have the ability to sway public opinion. You have power. You need to speak plainly about what's going on. You need to be the one to sell this message to people so that they put pressure on their elected officials to not be complicit and have blood on their hands.
Yeah, he's doing this thing where he's adhering to a political order that no longer exists in an effort to protect his colleagues. He doesn't want to say anything bad or cross because of this politeness, this my good friend across the aisle. He wants to be like a Joe Biden who called Kevin McCarthy honest and Mitch McConnell honorable. He wants to, it's this, he's been around too long, I guess. And he's doing this thing where you can't talk cross about the other side. Yeah, the fuck you can when Americans' lives are at risk. Yeah, the fuck you can when there's now an extreme high risk of terror attacks at the hands of Iran and allies of Iran here in the United States. And instead, he wants to protect them and cover for them rather than just call it like it is.
Well, and it gets worse because during the interview at one point, he starts talking about how behind the scenes, Republicans are desperate to get rid of Pete Hegseth, that he is not well-liked among Republicans in Congress. And, you know, naturally, when a politician says this during an interview, you would think that they would know that the next follow-up question is going to be, well, which Republicans are those that are talking about getting rid of Pete Hegseth behind the scenes?
Let me guess. Does Seth Moulton adhere to a political order that no longer exists and try to protect the Republicans and not name them?
Oh, boy, he sure does.
And by the way, behind the scenes, Republicans cannot wait to get rid of this guy. I mean, there's some serious debate about whether Noam or Hegseth should go first. But for most of the time that I've been in Congress this year, most Republicans have said Hegseth first. I mean, that's literally where it is. Which one of these people is so bad that Trump should fire them first? And the fact that Donald Trump has absolutely no respect for our troops is well known. I mean, this is the man who, according to his own first chief of staff, Marine General John Kelly, called the troops losers for signing up, mm-hmm. suckers for getting killed, and just does not understand the sacrifice of John McCain, who was captured, right? So it's no surprise there. But it is kind of amazing that Pete Hegseth, who actually did serve in the National Guard, has no respect for our killed in action troops. He was at a press conference recently where he dismissed questions about the six brave soldiers who lost their lives as the media trying to make bad news for Donald Trump. And it was so striking that right after he spoke, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs got up and immediately started his comments by memorializing those mm-hmm. American heroes. So Hegseth is much more on the Trump train here with no respect for our troops. And that's just not appropriate as a Secretary of Defense.
Congressman, who are those Republicans that are telling you behind closed doors that they want Hegseth out?
Well, there's a long list, and many of them are on the Armed Services Committee, but the point is that none of them will say it in public. None of them have the courage to say any of this in public. Even when the Venezuela boat strikes started, I heard Republicans say, if Biden were doing this, we would raise bloody hell, end quote, from Republicans. But they're totally cowed by Donald Trump. And that's just so pathetic. I mean, I don't understand what these people think they're going to tell their kids and grandkids about the time when Donald Trump was in power. And they did nothing to stand up not only for the Constitution, not only for American values, but for their own morality. I mean, how are they going to be able to explain this to their kids?
I agree it's pathetic. And in addition, it's a yes and situation. It's also pathetic they won't say it in public, but it's also pathetic that you sit here in public refusing to name them. You not only are you protecting Democrats who are voting the wrong way and endangering the lives of Americans, they have blood on their hands. Not only that, you're protecting Republicans. You're protecting Nazi fucking collaborators. What's that make you, Seth Moulton? It doesn't make you a leader, brother, I'll tell you that right now.
Well, and what's the downside of naming the long list of Republicans who are cowardly and saying behind closed doors that they want to get rid of Pete Hegseth and then saying in public that they support Pete Hegseth? What is the downside of naming these people? It's going to be uncomfortable for you personally when you go to work.
Right.
It ultimately, the benefit for the American people is to know the truth. And I'm sick of this. This is a regular thing that Democrats do. And they come into these interviews and they say, behind the scenes, Republicans hate Donald Trump. Behind the scenes, they're saying this, they're saying that. The time to protect these people has long passed. And we need to do something to stop Donald Trump, to rein him in. Not just because of the damage that he's causing, but also because of the widespread hopelessness that we see among the American people every time they wake up and see the latest unlawful, unconstitutional action that Donald Trump has taken, while all of the Democratic elected leaders sign onto their social media and say that they're really concerned about Donald Trump's latest illegal, unconstitutional behavior. At a certain point, you need to make these names public and ensure that the American people have the opportunity to call their elected leaders and call them hypocrites and liars and demand more from them.
Listen, Seth, if you are protecting Republicans who are protecting Donald Trump, you, by virtue of the transitive property, are protecting Donald Trump. Let that sink in, Congressman. Do you want to be that guy? You get asked the follow-up, well, who are these Republicans? Oh, it's a long list. Well, then give us a few names. Name them. Shame them. Put pressure on these people to start voting the correct way. This is, it's weakness. It is not leadership in any way, shape, or form.
And if Seth Moulton is your representative, you should give him a call and let him know that you want to know the names
and if
of
you would like
those
that
Republicans.
Number, and if you would like that number, Brittany Page, just so you know, everybody, it is 202-224-3121. Again, for posterity's sake, to put in your phone, to program this number in your phone, 202-224-3121.
So we're going to transition away from the war in Iran to the Epstein files, because there's new reporting coming out related to Jeffrey Epstein's death that is continuing to add to the pile of evidence that Epstein did not, in fact, die by suicide. And this latest report, there's actually two. Okay. One is Julie K. Brown, who is the journalist who broke the story on Jeffrey Epstein and his crimes. She is reporting in the Miami Herald that a incarcerated person who was housed at the Metropolitan Correctional Center in New York told the FBI that he overheard prison guards talking about covering up Epstein's death on the morning that he died. Combine that with reporting that Julie K. Brown references from the New York Post about one of the prison guards who was working the night that Epstein was found dead, that she was Googling him minutes before his body was found, like latest status update, Epstein in jail, and also had mysterious deposits that were being put into her account before and after the death. So those are two reports that we're going to talk about, but we want to kind of go back in time and refresh your memory a little bit, because so much has happened and it's difficult to remember. It's difficult to keep track. So we're going to go back in time right after the death in November 2019 is when this news package is from. And two Epstein jail guards were actually arrested on federal charges for falsifying documents.
Tonight, the two guards on duty the night Jeffrey Epstein died by suicide facing criminal charges. Tova Noel and Michael Thomas are accused repeatedly of failing to conduct 30-minute inmate checks and of falsifying jail records to make it look like they had. Thomas allegedly telling a supervisor, "We messed up. We didn't do any rounds." Prosecutors say video surveillance shows the guards sat at their desks and appeared to have been asleep, at times browsing the internet for furniture and motorcycles. Epstein had just been removed from suicide watch but was left for 8 hours before he was found with a noose around his neck. Those guards have pleaded not guilty, their union blaming staff shortages. Today, the director of the Bureau of Prisons grilled by senators about Epstein's death.
Do you concur with the opinion that it was a suicide?
That was the finding of the coroner, sir.
Okay. Do you have any evidence to suggest otherwise?
I do not.
The pathologist hired by Epstein's family to investigate has said that the evidence points to homicide. Federal prosecutors say that security footage shows no one entered the area where Epstein was housed that night.
So one thought that came to me when I was listening to that clip at the end there is the juxtaposition of what the official record says, which is that Jeffrey Epstein died by suicide, and when his family employed a independent autopsy report to assess the cause of death, and that found homicide. And so you think about what happens with police killings, police murders, when the police say that the person died a certain way, and then the family says, no, we're going to hire our own independent death investigator, and then that person finds a different cause of death.
And time after time after time, the independent arbiter of the coroner's report, or not the coroner's report, of an autopsy ends up being correct. That happens all the time. That's happened in ICE custody shit right now.
Right. So Tova Novell, you heard that name. Tova Novell is one of Noel. Keep doing it. It's hard to say that name. Is one of the correctional officers in the topic here, because she is the one who received the cash deposits. She is the one who was Googling these things. But I want to read from this Miami Herald reporting from Julie K. Brown before we get to our next clip and talk a little bit more about these details of these Google searches. So Julie K. Brown writes here, quote, "The federal government's online Epstein library contains a 5-page handwritten report of an FBI interview with an inmate who awoke the morning of August 10th, 2019 to the loud commotion in the special housing unit where he and Epstein were jailed. Breathe, breathe, he recalled officers shouting at 6:30 a.m. Then he said he heard an officer say, dudes, you killed that dude. A female guard replied, if he is dead, we're going to cover it up and he's going to have an alibi. My officers, the FBI notes said. The inmate claimed the whole wing overheard the exchange. Later, after learning Epstein had died, he said inmates said, Miss Noel killed Jeffrey. He identified the female guard as Tova Noel, one of two correctional officers who were later charged with falsifying reports so that it appeared from their records that they had made the rounds that night when they had not. The charges against her and the other officer, Michael Thomas, were later dropped, but both were fired. So this is another situation where also, you know, someone who doesn't have power is giving their report to people with power, and they are less likely to be believed, and their story is likely to be downplayed.
Right.
And that's what we saw in this case. But when we pivot to the New York Post reporting about Tova Noel, that's when we start to see these additional details about the things that she was Googling and the cash that she received. So reading from the New York Post reporting here, one of Jeffrey Epstein's prison guards Googled the sex predator minutes before he was found dead and also made a mysterious $5,000 cash deposit 10 days before the predator's jail cell suicide, new Department of Justice documents reveal. Noel Googled, quote, latest on Epstein in jail at 5:42 a.m. and then again at 5:52 a.m., less than 40 minutes before her colleague, Correctional Officer Michael Thomas, found the disgraced financier dead in his cell by hanging at 6:30 a.m., according to an FBI record of Noel's internet search history that night. Earlier that shift, Noel shopped for furniture online and snoozed on the job instead of making the mandated checks every 30 minutes. The FBI highlighted the eerie internet search in its 66-page forensic examination of the Bureau of Prisons desktop computers of Noel and Thomas. It was the only search highlighted.
Pretty damning. I mean, you said earlier that it's not substantiated and we don't really know. And that's certainly true. But man, it doesn't look good when you're searching minutes before he's discovered. Was he discovered yet? What's the news? What are the updates? While also receiving all of these high dollar, mysterious bank account deposits and shit.
Yeah, she has also denied searching. Denied making those searches.
Right.
And according to the New York Post reporting, quote, meanwhile, Chase Bank flagged cash deposits in Noel's bank account in a suspicious activity report to the FBI in November 2019. Another file from the DOJ revealed a total of 12 deposits began in April 2018, the bank said, and culminated in the largest deposit for $5,000 on July 30th, 2019. And in Julie K. Brown's article, she also referenced that at the time, Noel's bank records also revealed that she was making payments on a brand new Range Rover and that she was not asked about the cash during her DOJ interview.
This lady's in danger. This lady's physical safety, her very life is in danger. She needs to be protected because they're going to go to her. If these were cash deposits, they're going to go to her and they're going to say, hey, where'd you get this cash money to deposit into your account? She's not going to be able to say anything. If she says, oh, I was at a casino. All right, we're going to trace your cell phone to find out where you got the money, where you won. We're going to be able to go through volumes of surveillance cameras to see you on the floor of a casino. Like, whatever excuse she gives is going to fall apart. She's not going to be able to say a family member gave it to her because they'll go to the family member and say, hey, where'd you get this money? And the trail's going to fall apart. She's going to be forced to either take the hit and be convicted or out the person that gave her the money. And if they're willing to kill people, she's at risk.
Well, and the other aspect of this is kind of the ongoing developments that have occurred surrounding the surveillance video in the jail. Remember, there was the missing minute. They claimed that the government officials had deleted the official video. There's been all kinds of kind of an evolution in reporting.
Remember, Pam Bondi was like, oh, that every at the end of every night, there's always on every tape a missing minute. But actually, it was like a minute, like a missing 3 minutes or so. So the DOJ has covered for this. They've lied. Pam Bondi has perjured herself before Congress in its service to Donald Trump protecting him to lie about this entire ordeal, especially related to the death of Jeffrey Epstein and the surveillance footage and the TikTok, the actual timeline of his protection in the cell.
Well, and I certainly hope that, given that Pam Bondi has been subpoenaed, that Democrats are prepared to question her about these very issues, because that will be an important piece of it. But
hopefully Seth Moulton's not there.
But let's listen to this reporting from about a month ago regarding some of these details about the surveillance footage from the jail.
For years, federal authorities have insisted no one entered Epstein's jail cell the night he died in 2019. But surveillance video, now under new scrutiny, appears to show a figure in orange near his cell hours before he was found dead. Newly released Justice Department documents show the FBI initially considered the possibility that the figure could have been an inmate, not a corrections officer. Independent video analysts tell CBS News the movement matches someone wearing a prison uniform, not staff. Epstein's death was ruled a suicide, but these new findings are renewing questions about what happened inside that cell and what may have been missed.
Too many questions. Too few answers, especially when we have a Department of Justice helmed by a sycophant for Donald Trump who has shown a proclivity, a desire, a penchant for protecting Donald Trump. I mean, look, I want to ask the tough questions, absolutely. But the only thing that comes to mind is, what's the Dow right now, Brittany? Is it over 50,000? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, you can see why that she wanted to talk about the Dow instead of all of this. And the New York Post is reporting that, according to an internal FBI briefing also released in the DOJ files, that Noel was likely the mysterious orange shape spotted in the blurry surveillance video, that if you were watching that previous news package, you saw them referencing in the clip that appeared around 12:40 p.m. that night. They write, quote, at approximately 10:40 p.m., a correctional officer believed to be Tova Noel carried linen or inmate clothing up to the L tier. Last time any correctional officer approached the only entrance to the special housing unit tier, the agency wrote. And in a sworn statement, Noel, who was working a double shift that day, told investigators she last saw Epstein alive somewhere around after 10 and that she never gave out linen ever or clothing to inmates because that's done the shift before.
Let me say this. I think it's notable that this reporting is coming from the New York Post, the Rupert Murdoch conservative sister company of Fox News, New York Post. This isn't some leftist media outlet. This isn't Jacobin or even like MS Now. Obviously not leftist MS Now, but this isn't some outlet with an axe to grind against Donald Trump. This isn't a gotcha organization that's looking to take down Donald Trump, to damage the agenda and legacy of Donald Trump. This is conservative media. The New York Post is as conservative as it gets. Bordering on conspiracy theory nonsense and reporting that is sets out to damage the agenda of Republicans or Democrats. So we should be taking this with all of the seriousness that it deserves, because it is coming from even allies of Donald Trump are saying that we got a problem here.
Yeah. So I started out very suspicious of claims that Jeffrey Epstein did not die by suicide, because it was very much part of kind of a QAnon conspiracy at large. And I obviously was not into the QAnon conspiracy theories.
Wait, you didn't believe that Democrats were eating the faces of babies and imbuing themselves with the power of adrenochrome? You didn't believe that Hillary Clinton was the tip of the spear of a child sacrifice cabal in the basement of a pizza place here in Washington, D.C. Doesn't indeed have a basement?
I did not. Oh, okay. Yeah. But, you know, this is raising a lot of questions, and we're seeing that the rot goes very deep here, and other countries are taking action on the people that are in positions of power that are implicated in wrongdoing in the Epstein files. And yet somehow here in America, that is not taking place. I mean, Howard Lutnick admitted to going to Epstein Island. Wow. And there's now a photo that the DOJ, deleting things, putting things up and deleting it.
Accidentally released or it was accidentally released and then they tried to delete it and then they had to put it back because it got found out. I don't know.
And there's a photo of him on the island and he claims he was there with, you know, multiple nannies and his kids and his wife. But in the photo, it's only men and Jeffrey Epstein and Howard Lutnick. So I'm sure maybe the ladies were doing something different at the time.
Probably having a Bible study, Brittany Page.
But again, you know, his commerce secretary has been implicated in going to Epstein's island, and yet he still stands behind him at press briefings, and no one's like, hey, why is Howard Lutnick standing next to you when he went to Epstein's island? I mean, there should be a question about this every single time Donald Trump is in front of the press. I know there are many important things going on, but this is also important. The victimization of children, the exploitation of children, the abuse of children, that is very important. And the fact that men who are in positions of power are implicated in these crimes and are allowed to stand there and smile and hold their positions of power is really a black mark on this country. And I mean, there are many.
Well, listen, we've got a situation where the three people who have been named the most in the Epstein files are Jeffrey Epstein, Ghislaine Maxwell, and Donald Trump. One of them died in prison after being convicted of child rape. One of them is in prison right now after being convicted of crimes against children. And the other one is president of the United States. But we're bringing in creeper Bill Clinton to answer questions, but not Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're willing to go that deep to be questioning former presidents, but not Donald Trump, even though he's, I think, named the third most amount in the files. Mm-hmm. But he's off limits. We can't talk to him. He's exonerated. He's completely innocent of any charges, even though we have credible accusations and multiple FBI interviews with people who accuse Donald Trump of crimes against them. Like the victim themselves has been interviewed in multiple FBI 302s, which are the government form that they write their interview details on. It is just a failure all the way around to get justice for these victims.
And I do want to note that Julie K. Brown, again, the journalist who broke the Epstein story in the Miami Herald, she does not believe that Epstein died by suicide. So I just want to note that.
I mean, if anybody is credible relative to the reporting surrounding this particular story, it is Julie K. Brown at the Miami Herald. We owe our society and the victims, everyone owes her a debt of gratitude because of the fact that of intrepid reporting about the conviction and about Alex Acosta and all of that. Man, it's remarkable. Great, an amazing journalist.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, we're going to leave you there. We would love your opinion on any and all of these topics. The number is 657-464-7609. And of course, as always, you can email a voice memo from your smartphone or a regular old-fashioned email to idoubtit@dollemore.com. We would ask that if you find it in your heart, if you have passion for this program, you want to help produce this work, you can go to patreon.com/idoubtitpodcast and help support this work that way. We love and appreciate you very much. Thanks for joining us today and every day, this episode and every episode. We'll see you next time for Brittany Page.
Hang in there, everybody.
I am Jesse Dollemore, and this has been episode 966 of I Doubt It.